This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, producer Russ White and I are at the Ingham County Fairgrounds in lovely Mason, Michigan, spending some quality time at the Michigan Energy Fair. The Michigan Energy Fair is organized and hosted by the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association. It's an annual event to help educate the public about clean, sustainable energy technologies. Over the next hour, we'll talk to several guests in the renewable energy arena. And what better person to begin with than the executive director of the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association, Dr. Del Bockert. Del, looks like things are well underway.
Kirk, thank you. They certainly are. We've got a good crowd already. We've got close to 100 exhibitors. A lot of exciting things going on. Chairman Quackenbush just spoke to a large audience in the community hall. So we're off to a good start.
That'll be Chairman Quackenbush of the Michigan Public Service Commission, right?
It would indeed. It would indeed.
Tell our listeners, we had you on the show a couple of weeks ago, but tell us a little bit about the association, Del.
Well, the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association has a membership of individuals who are interested and committed to renewable energy and a number of businesses who are also committed to renewable energy. And we have very large businesses and very small startup businesses all supporting the concepts behind renewable energy.
Well, walking in today into the exhibit hall here at the Ingham County Fairgrounds, I noticed outdoors you have some very large exhibits. I was particularly struck by some of the solar exhibits.
Yeah, they're pretty neat. I came out last night about 10 o'clock, and the solar streetlight was on. And I was actually able to get some pretty neat shots of a solar streetlight with the two little panels up there. Pretty exciting and amazing how much light it put out.
Now, the Michigan Energy Fair, a little bit of history on that. This is the first time, I believe, for Ingham County, but you have certainly been around the state at other venues.
Yes, that's true. There have been over 10 Michigan Energy Fairs in the past, most of them on the West Coast. We decided to move it to this area to get closer to the heart of the state, closer to a big population base, and based on the crowds coming in, it looks like we've been successful.
Adele, you've been passionate about renewable energy for a long time, your predecessor, John Sarver, as well. What are you noticing over the 10 years or 11 years of the fair among the people who come that might be different from when you started?
I think they're more hopeful. I think the products are better. The products are more efficient. More people are educated. More people are interested. I mean, you turn on your TV and watch the Tagger Show, you're going to hear about renewable energy. It's everywhere.
Yeah, I was. It's interesting. I was watching the Tigers just recently, and then also right after that, I flipped over to CNN. Even some of the largest corporations, energy corporations in the world, are touting their commitment to renewable energy. How much of that is real, and how much of that is just good public relations?
Well, first of all, it is good public relations, but secondly, it's good business. I mean, who can afford to waste energy at the cost of the energy dollar in this day and age? And there are myriads of ways to save on your energy dollar, starting with energy efficiency. Then you look at the renewable aspects and see what will work for you.
What kinds of questions do people have when they come? I mean, I notice you're sort of eavesdropping and bird-dogging, but what are the kinds of things that people want to know about renewable energy when they come to a fair like this?
Well, it can be as simple as if the people, I'm interested in a geothermal system. Where does all that water go? Where does it come from? What do I do with it? How much wind do I need? Why won't a wind turbine work on my farm? How many solar panels do I need to do something viable? So there are lots of questions from the small landowner who wants some help. But we've got some pretty big operations, too. I mean, there are people here saying, how do we get brownfields developed with renewable energy? Good stuff for the environment.
Another interesting dimension that I've noticed here is, you know, there are a lot of people that I know we've interviewed on this show who integrate renewable energy options. So they may have a geothermal heating and cooling system, but part of that may be hooked to a solar system or to a wind turbine. There seems to be a growing interest in integrating different kinds of systems depending on a particular need.
Well, I think there are a couple reasons for that. One, each one of those enters into the mix and makes renewable energy more viable. And almost everybody that's looking at it on a big scale is looking at multiple options for their renewable energy because it's going to take a little bit of everything. And we need all of those options in Michigan. We need everything. We need a lot of energy if we're going to continue to be a growing and successful state.
What about biofuels? That's another form of renewable energy. Sometimes when we talk about wind and solar and geothermal, it gets a little bit lost in the shuffle, but that's part of the portfolio as well.
It is indeed, and check with me after I go on the MSU bus tour to see, and I'm going to learn all about it today, and then I'll be able to answer more questions, but it looks like one of the ways to go.
Now, I just heard about the MSU bus tour from some of the folks out at the front gate, but you're going to see a variety of MSU venues, all related to the great initiative there of Be Spartan Green.
Yes, they're heading in the right direction, and I think what folks are going to see today is going to brighten their outlook on renewable energy and what can be done on a place as big as MSU. And their energy dollar is pretty critical to them, too. They're looking to save millions by using renewable energy. Some of these alternative energy vehicles out here are just downright exciting. I mean, everything from a restored Austin Healey that runs on electricity to a woman who pedaled here from Lansing yesterday with her Go Green trike delivery system. Pretty exciting. And the Dean Trailways bus sitting out here. It's a hybrid bus. No, the future's here, folks.
Yeah, Dean Trailways is doing some amazing things with their bus fleet, but I'm pretty proud that I drove here today in my Chevy Volt.
And I drove here in my Toyota Prius.
Well, again, I'm talking with Dr. Del Bockert. He is the executive director of the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association. Del, congratulations on another successful fair. We're looking forward to talking to several of your exhibitors. We're going to look at geothermal and solar and wind and some other alternative energy strategies over the next 45 minutes or so.
Great. Thanks for being with us, and we'll see you in about 1 year right back here.
You're tuned to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Your host is Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, the word geothermal is used a lot, but it's interesting how many misconceptions there are about what that means. To talk a little about geothermal energy, we have Jerry Schultz, who's the president of S&J Heating and Cooling, which is based in DeWitt, Michigan, just north of Lansing. S&J has been specializing in geothermal systems since 1981 and has installed well over 2,000 systems all across Michigan. Jerry, welcome to the program.
And we're glad to be here.
Jerry, give us a little bit of background. When we talk about geothermal systems, what are we talking about?
We're just talking about using the earth as our source of energy to heat and cool a home. We don't produce heat, we don't manufacture heat, we just transfer heat from one area to the next.
Well, in this case, yeah, you're transferring heat from the soil, and the interesting thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, but about 5 or 6 feet below the surface of the soil temperature pretty much stays the same throughout the 365 days of the year.
Yeah, that's correct. It's pretty stable. It changes a little bit. It's about a 6 week delay between surface temperature and what the ground temperature is down at 6 foot, so it's pretty stable.
So the temperature, what is the temperature? Is it between 40 and 50 degrees Fahrenheit?
It's going to vary between 45 and 51 degrees in this area.
What about this past winter when it was so brutally cold? Did that make any difference at all in terms of that soil temperature?
It did in March, but throughout the winter, it's pretty stable. It doesn't care if it's 30 below out or 100 above. It's still the same temperature.
So how do you get that 45 to 50 degree soil temperature? How do you get that into people's homes and into businesses?
Okay, the system is set up as it is a refrigeration system. Okay, so in the process of exchanging heat, the refrigerant circuit is compressed. The gas, the hot gas or warm gas, if you want to call it that, is compressed. When you compress anything, you make it hotter. And that's where we get that boost up to 100 degree temperature.
So I'm a homeowner, and I come to you and I say, you know, Jerry, I've been thinking about geothermal. I understand that it might save me some money in the long run. What's the process that we would go through to even take a look at the feasibility of a system in my home?
Well, first we'd want to come out and check the house out and see that it's tight and worthy of a geothermal system. If the house isn't worthy, we're going to tell you to straighten it up and tighten it up, okay, before we put in a geothermal system. And then we just figure out what your loads are, what you need, and then we put it in from there.
Now, by tightening up my house, what would that mean? Would that mean, I mean, if I've got a lot of problems with windows and doors, a lot of energy loss, is that what you mean by tight insulation, those kinds of things?
Yes. We'd like to see, you know, tighter windows. A case of caulk will do wonders for you in tightening up the house. Cheapest way to tighten up a house is go around and plug all the holes so we can't have that air coming in. If that air comes in, you got to reheat it.
I'm talking with Jerry Schultz, who's the president of S&J Heating and Cooling in DeWitt, Michigan, and they specialize in geothermal systems. One thing I do here, Jerry, and you probably get the question quite a bit from folks at fairs like this, front-end costs for geothermal can be somewhat high, but the return on investment can be pretty rewarding. I mean, when people ask you about the front-end costs and the payback on investment, what do you tell them?
Well, we just tell them that it's your overall life cycle cost that you want to look at, and you're going to get that back in a few years. In the case of right now where they have tax credits, your return on your investment is going to be 2 to 3 years when you're looking at LP gas or oil. If you're looking at natural gas, it's more like 7 to 10 years return on your investment. So it's pretty quick return, and it's for the comfort you get and the savings you get, it's well worth it.
What about the temperature control in the home? As you well know, in some families, maybe the ladies or the guys in the family like the temperature a little higher, and somebody likes it a little lower, and the same thing in the wintertime. Is it relatively easy to adjust your temperature in a geothermal system?
Yeah, it is. It's more stable. It's going to be more even throughout the house because it runs more than a conventional system, so it keeps the house more even. And as far as people moving the thermostat up and down, we don't recommend you do that. You don't really save a lot. But, you know, people want different temperatures in different rooms, and you can have zoning if you want. Especially the women, they want things warmer. So we try to satisfy that need. Okay.
So zoning, it would be that you would have different zones in the house where the temperature could be different in different parts of the home.
Right, that's correct.
Another thing about geothermal, too, in terms of questions that I hear, the difference between an open-loop system and a closed-loop system, I think you folks pretty much specialize in the closed-loop system, but with the open-loop, do you ever see many of those anymore, or virtually all the systems closed-loop?
We're still seeing the open loops. We do maybe one or two a year, and that's our choice, of course, is the closed loop because it's more trouble-free. Once you put it in the ground, that's the end of it. It sits there for a long period of time. Open loops, you always have well problems, bad water problems, filter problems, and, it's the most trouble creating problem you can get to have an open loop. Okay.
Well, I have a well in my home, and I understand what you mean by not only water softening problems and well problems and lightning strikes and all sorts of different things. I've talked to some business owners who put geothermal systems in. There's a major car dealership down in Heartland. And one of the things that they said about that, not only did they put it in for energy efficiency, but they also put it in because it draws a certain type of people to the showroom, and they actually give tours of their system to show that they're sort of a green dealership, and that actually helps them sell cars.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and it probably makes their showroom and everything a lot more comfortable. They save a lot of money in putting it in that way. And it is green. Geothermal has been green since the concept. The first patent, I think, is back in 1912. So it's just a green product.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but when America was expanding west and there were sod houses on the prairie and all those sorts of things, those were essentially geothermal heating and cooling systems.
Yes, that's true. Anything that where you're using the earth as your temperature, that's geothermal. And if you think back in the Roman days where they dug tunnels underneath their living quarters, the wind as it went through the tunnels warmed up the living quarters. So it's all geothermal.
Another question we get sometimes about geothermal, it does use water to convey that temperature from the soil through the system. What about water use and water conservation? I mean, is the water essentially recycled?
If you're on a closed loop, there is no recycling. You're just using the same fluid. It's usually an antifreeze solution. On an open loop, it's just dumped someplace. You know, you got to have a good place to dump it.
but it's dumped back into the aquifer, the system. So, I mean, it's not like you're abusing water use or what have you.
Well, at some point, it's going to get back to the aquifer. How long does it take to get back? That depends on the area you're in. So some of it may take 40 years to get back. It depends. So,
how long does it take typically in a home to install a system? I imagine that varies somewhat, but there must be a certain period of time that's fairly typical for installation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, retrofits generally take a couple of days to a couple of weeks. New construction, it just goes along with the construction process. It may be 2-3 months. It may be a year. You just new construction to kind of draw it out.
Well, you've been doing these things since 1981, Jerry. What have you found? What are the differences in the way people look at geothermal now, maybe, than when you started back in 1981?
Well, that's kind of amazing because people today seem to understand a little bit more than what they did. They're a little more educated on it. But it's still a minority of people that really understand what geothermal is. They just haven't heard of it before.
Do you find with the high cost of fossil fuels and things of that nature that people, particularly younger people, are really looking not only at the environmental impacts of this, but get a pretty good handle on what they can save financially?
The younger people, the more educated people, the higher income people, they are going for it more, and just so much, not so much because of fuel costs, they just want the geothermal and the environmental impact and the savings that goes with it.
Well, geothermal, again, an alternative energy source, a green energy source. I've been talking with Jerry Schultz. He's the president of S&J Heating and Cooling in DeWitt, Michigan. Installed well over 2,000 geothermal systems all across Michigan. Jerry, thanks so much for being on Greening of the Great Lakes.
Thank you for being here. Appreciate it.
You're tuned to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Your host is Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, continuing our interviews from the Michigan Energy Fair, which is sponsored by the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association, our next guest is Art Toy. Art is the owner of Four Elements Energy, which is based in Lawrence, Michigan, down in the southwestern part of the state. Art, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you talking with us.
Four Elements Energy, that's an interesting name, but I think it's very appropriate based on what I've learned about your company. But tell our listeners a little bit about Four Elements Energy.
Four Elements Energy, our firm designs and installs renewable energy systems, whether they're wind power systems, solar electric systems, solar hot air systems, solar water systems, or wood heating systems here.
Let's talk a little bit about wind. Everybody now who's gone through mid-Michigan has seen the wind turbines up around Breckenridge and Gratiot County and what have you. But if I wanted to do, or if I were thinking about wind for my home, and we can talk about your home as well, which has been featured on CNN, but what's the process I would go through if I were to call you?
The first process we would always tell the potential client is, would you please check with your local authority having jurisdiction, whether it's the village, the township, city, or county? And it's all different around the state. For example, in Mason County, where Ludington is, they don't have township ordinances regarding wind. They have a county-wide ordinance. Others have it at the township level. For example, in the city of Portage, they have a standard height of 30 feet. Our recommendation is for wind turbines to be at 80 feet or higher, and for turbines, the lower sweep of the blade to be at least 30 feet taller than the nearest structures. So zoning is absolutely critical. There is no statewide standard for zoning, so we always tell the potential client, what is your township's zoning ordinance? And some have it, some don't. Some set an arbitrary height. Some set a fall radius. A fall radius being if the tower were to come down, they typically require a 150% fall radius. So if the tower is 100 feet, the fall radius has to be 150 feet and not touch the setbacks of your property. So siting wind for residential sites is quite challenging.
Okay, so the first step is to check in terms of the ordinance with respect to wind. And then let's assume that the ordinance is favorable to the construction of a wind turbine. Then what?
Well, if that's the case, that's a major hurdle. We would then, at the same time, while the client is checking zoning, we can actually check the weather services as well as the National Renewable Energy Lab and the Michigan Energy Office. All three sources have some aspect of wind data. In fact, much more so because anemometers, the little devices placed on towers to capture wind speed and direction, that database continues to be built, as well as LIDAR information, which also records wind speed. So we would use those wind charts to tell if your location, based on the address you give me, I can look up what the actual wind speeds are on an annual basis or calculated based on LIDAR, a former radar. And based on that, if your site has an annual wind speed of 12 miles per hour or greater, that would be a good candidate. Now, realizing most of the state is not at 12 miles an hour, it's typically lower than that. You would find those wind speeds in the thumb area and along the coastlines.
Okay, so the wind speeds are favorable. I've got favorable zoning. I notice you have a 10-kilowatt wind turbine for your home as well. But, okay, so then where do we go from there?
Where we go from there, now that we know that your zoning is applicable, you have a good wind resource, I would then find out what sort of resources I have available for cranes, for contractors local to the area, because I'd rather not bring my entire crew if you're in the thumb or in the UP. I would rather have a local contractor excavate, pour concrete, put in rebar, and a local crane operator to help raise the tower. Typically, we prefer towers without guide wires because that takes up a lot of space. We would prefer towers that are self-supporting by themselves and consequently would require a crane to lift and place in place and for me to climb it and to release the harness from the crane.
We're talking about wind energy with Art Toy, who is the owner of Four Elements Energy based in Lawrence, Michigan. Art, one of the questions we typically get, and I know you do as well, I mean, there is an upfront cost to doing wind turbines. Next question, what's the timeline on my return on investment? Is there a sort of a typical ROI that you talk about with people?
Yes, there is. For a typical wind site of 12 miles per hour, even that, the ROI for residential is well over 25 years. Now, when I say that, I always have to preface, for residential wind turbines, they're typically 160 feet or less. So unless you have a wind site that is 15 miles or greater, the ROI is going to be extremely long. Now, when we talk utility scale, I always have to preface this. Their towers are 300 feet and greater. At that point, wind is actually less per watt than solar. But I can place solar in most parts of Michigan, granted, as long as there's no shadows in the area between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. So I'm not saying there isn't a place for small wind in Michigan. It has to be an excellent site. But if it's at a marginal site and if it's off-grid, we always recommend a combination hybrid system of both wind and solar to keep your batteries charged. We don't recommend purely one or the other if you're going off-grid or you have a system that needs to be off-grid.
And that's one thing we've noticed doing this show for 5 years, that the integration of some of these alternative energy systems where you may have a geothermal, I have a neighbor who has geothermal, solar, and wind, all working together, and he's actually off-grid.
Oh, yes, it's very challenging. Geothermals are systems that we like to recommend, especially if they're on-grid, but installing geothermal off-grid is very challenging because of the high initial energy needed to start the pumps and blowers. So we always have to size the system for the greatest load at any one time. And for geothermal, it's not only the pump for the glycol, but the air handlers as well. So we have to size the battery and the inverter that converts the DC power from the battery or from the solar or for the wind into AC power to run the geothermal systems. Yes, it can be done, but it has to be done with a lot of upfront planning.
what I'm hearing about is that every case is unique. I mean, the underlying message here, and that any homeowner or business that wants to move into alternative energy, you really have to do a lot. You have to do your homework. You have to talk to people like you, and you have to make decisions based on your own unique circumstances.
Absolutely. We're not at the point here in Michigan where you can have a cookie-cutter approach like you see in California and Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Arizona. And for those are typical grid tie where a crew comes in 2 days installs a rooftop or ground-mounted solar, which is purely grid tie. No batteries are involved, and there's no issue with shading. For Michigan, we have beautiful trees, but trees shade, so we always have to do more work and diligence to find a site, whether it's on the rooftop or on the ground, that has full sun from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. every day of the year. So it's a greater challenge in a state like Michigan where there's a lot of vegetation.
Renewable portfolio standard in Michigan is currently at 10% by 2015, I believe. There's some talk that could go higher. What's your take on that?
Our take on this as far as the 10% renewable portfolio standard is from a technical aspect, the grid can easily take up up to 20 to 22% with no issues for managing the load. When you go above 25%, then you actually have to do some load management here. So from a technical aspect, there's no technical reason to be between 20 and 25% our renewable portfolio standard. Now, can we go faster now? I think to help in the planning process for both installers and the utility, that we have a stepwise process of where we know we will go and grow each year. So to help the utilities plan and to help installers schedule their installs. And my fear is that with the primary coming up or the general election, that the next legislature or the lame duck session may go the way of Ohio, which shortly after their primary, their lame duck session actually put a hold on their RPS. And that's something we and the installer community are quite concerned over.
Given the governor's support of alternative energy, though, and given the recent report of the Michigan Public Service Commission, I'm not hearing too much downtown about that happening in Michigan.
I am not too, but you never know what can happen in the legislature. Eric Nesbitt, who is my state representative, actually chairs the Energy and Technology Committee. And every chance I have, I try to speak with him on that matter. We try to maintain our dialogue with our local representatives.
Well, the take-home message from that is talk to your legislators if you are a fan of renewable energy, like most of our great listeners are. I've been talking with Art Toy. He is the owner of Four Elements Energy, based in Lawrence, Michigan. Art, thanks so much for being on the program.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate your time to come on out to the Energy Fair.
You're tuned to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Your host is Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, my next guest is Alan O'Shea. Alan is the president of Contractors Building Supply in Copamish, Michigan. Copamish is up in Manistee County, not too far from Crystal Mountain Resort. He's been in the renewable energy business for 4 decades. He's also the vice president of the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association and one of the founders of the Michigan Energy Fair. Alan, good to have you on the program.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit about the fair and answer a few questions for you in the meantime.
I was struck on your website. You had a post there where carbon has exceeded 400 parts per million, and you're encouraging people on your website, do something. Buy a wind and solar system, install LED lighting, plant a tree or mini trees, do something. You're obviously very passionate about climate change. What do you think most people think about climate change?
Most people think about climate change, it's relative to last winter. It's relative to the temperature today. It is very difficult to talk about carbon. And, you have to remember that 90%, 6% of the carbon was always here. It was created by the Earth. 4% we created, and it doesn't seem like much, but that 4% on a compounded basis has been building up, and nothing has been done to eradicate it. We've lost all of our climax forests in the world, most of them. There's only 2% left. So how do you offset the carbon sinks that we used to have? Because a lot of folks don't even understand the difference between a maple and an elm or an ash. How are you going to tell them about photosynthesis and what goes on with a tree? A tree is sequestering carbon all the time, every tree we have. What we're trying to do with this fair and my website is bring together the sequesterers of carbon and the offsetters of carbon and the energy efficiency people, so we can put a unified group together to start doing some of the things that I talk about on the website, or that we post a lot of things there that hopefully stimulate the minds.
I'm talking with Alan O'Shea. He's president of Contractors Building Supply in Copamish, Michigan, up in Manistee County. Alan, we've talked in general terms, but let's talk about your business specifically. If I were considering solar or thinking about alternative energy options and would come to you, what would be the process we would go through, especially if I were interested in solar?
Okay, there's a couple ways it would take place. If you were a residential customer and you were interested in solar, and you, say, came to us out of Ann Arbor or Ypsilanti, Lansing, we would set with you and give you get an idea. We would Google your site. We would look at our dealer network around the state, because we believe in local support of local businesses, and we would say, you need to go to see AJ Leo Electric in Ypsilanti, because they have done all these jobs down there. They're top shelf, and we will provide the components for that. Now, if there's engineering that needs to be done, my son is a mechanical engineer, so we do that kind of at no extra cost. And sometimes once we Google the site, we see some problems. So we might figure out that you've got some limited capabilities there. Or we also would indicate to you our feelings about your energy consumption and ask you questions on that. I mean, in a very non-threatening manner.
One project you folks did was the Cherryland Electric Co-op, and that must have been up north, up around Traverse City. That sounds like a major project and a very successful one.
Yes, it was. And it was the first community solar project in the state of Michigan. And to the best of our knowledge, it was the first time in the United States that a municipal utility came together with a rural cooperative to form a partnership, because Traverse Light and Power joined up with Cherryland. And what we did is Cherryland their power is bought from Wolverine Power. So Wolverine is the major profit center. Cherryland is a nonprofit organization. They said, well, if we were going to team up with the Michigan company, and they knew of us, we were Cherryland customers, and what would we do? So the general manager and myself got together, and we started to work up a program, and they started with one string of collectors. I think it might have been 30 or 40 collectors, and they were going to sell those to people that wanted to buy, but maybe couldn't put them on their own home, or they were renters, or they were, many seniors say, well, I'm not going to live long enough to get my payback. Can I give it to my kids? All of those things. And what we did then is it was an explosion. We put on a couple of educational seminars. They sold that out in days. And then it's now expanded to 240 panels. There are two community solar programs in the state of Michigan now, one at Tri-County Rural Electric Cooperative and one at Cherryland. So there is a lot of activity. At this point in time, no actual projects under roof.
Let's come back to the homeowner, a person like myself. If I were looking at solar, there are front end costs to solar or to any alternative energy system, but the payback can be rather remarkable in terms of the return on investment. Why would somebody who's 66 years old want to look at solar?
Well, let me give you an example. First of all, I'll ask you a question. Why would someone at 60 ever want to have a CD with the interest you earn on a CD? Starting point, a solar system, you have a federal tax credit that allows you a 30% write-off for at least 2.5 more years. So I would say it would behoove you to look at doing that aspect in the next couple of years. We can't forecast past 2017, but as a homeowner, you would come in, we would show you and give you a very formal printout of the return on investment, what we would do, and how we would recommend you reduce your energy cost even before we put a solar system on. We give that out for free. And then if you had a $10,000 solar system, $3,000 would be a federal tax credit. So you're now down to $7,000, and we would give you a payback analysis, and it usually comes out under 10 years and over 8. So somewhere in the 8 to 10-year range.
And last question here, too, and one that I've been asked several times. What about, we're not going to be in the house forever, and our kids may someday be selling the house, or we may be selling the house. What about resale when you have a solar system on a home?
The assessors have a section in their tax assessment book that puts a value on it, and it's a positive value, not like swimming pools or certain additions that don't give you any credit. It has an asset value, and second of all, the system is going to last for 25 to 30 years, and that's pretty much maintenance free. And in doing that, even though we're back to the 60-year-old, and I can relate to what we have that conversation with a lot of people, because A, you have the money, you've stabilized. You know, you're not really growing a family anymore, so some of your costs are gone. Although the kids are still hanging around waiting for the inheritance now. You just tell them they're going to inherit a solar system. That's all.
That's great. Well, I've been talking with Alan O'Shea. Alan is president of the Contractors Building Supply in Copamish, Michigan. He is also a vice president of the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association and one of the founders of the Michigan Energy Fair. Alan, congratulations on yet another year, another successful energy fair. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. It has been a pleasure talking to you and meeting your group here. I appreciate it. So, good deal. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You're tuned to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Your host is Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, our next topic is energy efficiency, and here to talk with us about that is Terry Schroeder. Terry is the operations manager for Michigan Saves, which is a statewide program that provides financing for energy improvements and efficiencies in Michigan homes and businesses. Terry, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Tell us a little bit about Michigan Saves for our listeners who may not be familiar with it.
Michigan Saves was founded in 2010. With seed money from the Public Service Commission, and their goal was really to overcome the first cost barrier to energy efficiency. So we have financing programs to help homeowners and business owners, as you mentioned, access energy efficiency or renewable energy improvements in their home.
How long has the program been around, Terry?
Our residential program for homeowners, the Home Energy Loan Program, started making loans in 2010, and to date we have done over $30 million in residential energy improvement loans.
Let's start with residential, and then a little later in the interview we'll move into commercial. But I'm a homeowner, and I'm interested in energy efficiency, and I'm sure that there's a process that I need to go through. I mean, some people might do it sort of arbitrarily. Oh, I'm going to get new windows, or oh, I'm going to get new insulation. There's probably a better way to do it.
Absolutely, there is a better way to do it. So we have customers come in two ways. Like you mentioned, there are folks that know they need a new furnace. And so we have a database of over 300 residential energy efficiency contractors in this state that we have authorized and trained in our loan application process. So we recommend folks go to our website, and if you know what you're looking for, like a new furnace or windows, you can select those services. If you're just interested in improving your home overall, we suggest an energy audit. And those are on our website, those are called home performance contractors, or you can just select that you're looking for an energy audit. When an energy auditor comes to your home, they do a blower door test, they do a walkthrough audit, they look at your insulation levels, and they see where the air is leaking out of your home. And so we always recommend the first thing to do before you invest in new windows or a furnace is to seal up the envelope of your home so the air you are putting into your home doesn't leak out.
Now, these energy audits, I know that some of the major utilities do those, and then you mentioned the private contractors. Is one better than the other? I know you can't recommend specific businesses, but, I mean, if I've got this whole array of people who can do energy audits, how do I know which one to choose?
Yeah, so we just recommend you get a BPI-certified audit. Some of what the utilities do are just a walkthrough audit, and then someone's just walking through your home, which is a good first step. But if you're really looking to identify where the air is leaking out, the BPI-certified audit will do, like I said, that blower door test that measures how quickly air is coming into or leaving your home. And so that air you're cooling in the summer will sneak out into that 90-degree weather that's happening right now. And they also have thermal imaging cameras. So, you know, I had one done on my house last winter, and you can see where there's corners of your house that are freezing and look like the outside. And so it's really important to be able to identify those areas of your house to know where to make the first improvements.
What does an energy audit typically cost a homeowner?
That is a great question. And we know that they can run between $350 and $400. Like you said, the utilities have some energy optimization home performance initiatives where they can get help subsidize the cost of the audit. Michigan Saves actually has a list of over 30 contractors in the state right now that are partnering with us on our public service announcement, which is encouraging home energy improvements. And they have agreed to a $99 energy audit, which is a really great deal. And they're doing that because they know they're getting leads of people that really want to make a difference in their home and are looking to start with the first step of an energy audit. So 30 of our contractors, if you go to avoidenergydrama.com, you can put in your, if you follow the Michigan Saves link, you can put in your zip code and it will tell you the energy auditors that have agreed to that $99 energy audit in your area.
So my great producer, Russ White, and I have had our energy audit of our homes done, and we found that we need some things. Russ may need a new roof or something. I may need new windows. We may need caulking, insulation. You then can help set me up with a financial institution that can give me a pretty good deal, right?
We can. Our residential program works with 10 credit unions throughout the state, so we have statewide coverage. And like I said, those credit unions have made over $30 million in loans to homeowners across the state to date. And the best news of the summer is that we've asked our credit unions to come down in price. To date, they were at 7% for the first $30 million in loans. Most of our credit unions have come down to loan rates starting at 4.25%. Most of them are at below 4.99%. So we have really great rates that are new, and we encourage you now is the time to act while all these lenders have just sweetened the pot, really.
Well, I've got to ask you, because I am a credit union member, and so is Russ, you can also get pretty good deals on home equity loans as well, but with a home equity loan, you don't necessarily lock in an interest rate. When you do one of your loans, is that a locked-in interest rate, and for how long?
That is a great question. Our loans are all locked-in rates, fixed rates, and they're unsecured loans, so it's hassle-free. You can get approval at your kitchen table within 15 minutes. You make a phone call, the application is all over the phone or over the internet, and our credit unions approve you immediately or give you a decision immediately. And so we have credit unions will go up to 30,000. Some of them stop at 20. And the terms are up to 10 years. So it's fixed rate, 10 years, hassle-free.
Yeah, the home equity loan involves an inspection, and it also puts a lien on your property as well, and your loans do not. I'm talking with Terry Schroeder, and she is the operations manager for Michigan Saves. Terry, let's move from the residential into the whole commercial arena. I've known a couple businesses who've actually worked with you folks for LED lighting and things of that nature. They've been very pleased.
Yes, our business energy financing program was launched 18 months ago. And we have seen really great success. The activity in our commercial side has picked up drastically this year, and we've had over 900 applications, which is phenomenal. And I think we've done about $4 million in loans on the business side.
Now, on the commercial side, is it a similar thing that these are loans that can be up to $30,000, or do you have a bigger upside?
Much bigger upside on the commercial side. Our projects can go up to $250,000 and potentially above based on credit, but a lot of similarities in our program. This is also unsecured, so there's no lien on the property. We work with the commercial lease structure, so it acts as an operating cost to the business owner, and it doesn't impact their current lines of credit. Again, no additional mortgage on the property, and it's a fixed rate and up to 5 years on the commercial side.
Well, the fact that it can be written off from their tax purposes as a part of a business operation or business expense, so that actually brings that cost, the interest rate cost, even lower if you think of it in those terms.
Exactly, yep.
So it sounds like you're trying to grow the commercial side and trying to get the word out there. Where can people go, business owners and homeowners go, to get more information about the Michigan Saves program?
Well, we recommend you go to MichiganSaves.org, and we have homeowners, business owners, or municipal governments as our main customer segments, and so follow that track. We also have great partnerships with the utilities right now, especially on the commercial side, for energy improvements that follow their prescriptive measures on their energy optimization program. Both DTE Consumers and Board of Water and Light are buying down interest rates to 2.99 for business owners.
2.99. Wow, that's very attractive interest rate right now. Well, I wish you much success with Michigan Saves. I've been talking with Terry Schroeder. She is the operations manager for Michigan Saves. It's a program that provides some affordable financing for energy improvements and efficiencies in your homes and businesses. So good to talk to you, Terry.
Thank you so much, Kirk.
That was Dr. Kirk Heinze with Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. There's more online at mlive.com/environment. This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
It's a good bet that just about every rock jock who entered the business beginning in 1970 worked for Casey Kasem. At one time or another, we all ran the control board while Casey's American Top 40 program documented the popular musical taste. I had the opportunity to spend time in person with Casey on a couple of occasions, and he was every bit the self-effacing gentleman the public saw. I felt for Casey these past few months. The infighting with regard to his final wishes grabbed a paragraph in every obituary. That was unfortunate, but it doesn't detract from what Casey taught us. Here's what he taught me. It takes time to find your niche. Casey tried a variety of formats before falling into the AT40 groove. He worked in a number of places, each experience honing his skills and bracketing his vision. Whatever your field, nothing beats the seasoning you get from doing the work. Don't underestimate the value of a mentor. When Casey was first on the air in Detroit, he had a supportive boss, someone who allowed him to make mistakes and didn't diminish his self-esteem while he was learning. His boss's guidance? Don't be an imitation. Be yourself. And it turned out that the authentic Casey Kasem was something special. Follow the format, but don't be afraid to improve it. AT40 had a very specific routine. The music was center stage, but Casey provided the context that enhanced our enjoyment of what we heard. At the beginning, this meant doing a lot of research to understand each artist's backstory. In the years before the internet, this was hard work. As time progressed, Casey trusted the intuition that came with experience. When a staff member suggested the idea of doing a long-distance dedication, Casey ran with it, ultimately fulfilling over 3,000 of them. It brought him even closer to his audience. Someone is always listening, so watch your language. There's a well-circulated recording of Casey losing his temper in the studio. Well, having lived under the pressure of deadlines that depend on a number of people working together to meet them successfully, I can identify. Casey told me that he deeply regretted that experience and apologized to everyone involved. He said it was an important lesson that everything we say can have the power to hurt or heal. When you screw up, the most powerful words you can say are, "I'm sorry." Always record your voice tracks over the intros of the songs you play. This is the personal advice that Casey gave to me. The best radio execution is a symphony. The instruments include the music, the jingles, the commercials, and the announcer. They should all mesh into a seamless wave of energy and emotion. In the context of life and career, we need to grasp our purpose and discover how our voice can best contribute to the symphonic team we serve to create the best possible music together. Use your powers for the greater good. As Casey became a celebrity, he gave his time, talent, and treasure to people and organizations he believed in. Each of us have a following. It's important that we lead that following by example. So make it a good example to follow. Change with the times. During Casey's career, American Top 40 had a number of iterations. There was an America's Top 10 TV show. There were years when Casey couldn't use the Billboard charts for his countdown, so he found another source and kept counting. As radio programming became more homogenized, Casey's affiliates asked for a shorter countdown. And American Top 40 became American Top 20. Casey diversified, too. He had an equally successful career as a cartoon voice artist. If you're good at what you do, there will always be a way you can be paid to do it. But you have to be flexible, agile, and creative. Don't be afraid to break a paradigm or two along the way. Know when it's time to sign off. Casey's final countdown happened in July of 2009, just 1 year shy of four decades after AT40 first went on the air. He knew it was time to hand the reins over to someone else, and his system was so good that Ryan Seacrest slid easily and comfortably into the host's chair. If you are good at what you do, you will have created an environment where others can be equally successful in your role, and will have mentored a number of future stars to keep your constellation shining bright. And finally, keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars. Casey's trademark sign-off is the essence of his success. Plant your feet on a firm foundation of values, dream big dreams, and give your all to achieve them. This is the simplest definition of success I know, and I've tried to follow Casey's advice every step of the way. As with all things, Casey Kasem's voice may fade from popular consciousness, but the lessons we can learn from his life and times can help each of us make it to number one. I'm Scott Westerman at ScottWesterman.com. Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. To hear this show again, please click on the local tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR.